Succession number 10602, Reel 7.
May I ask you how large your squad was?
I think it would be between 35 and 40, or around that number. There would be one sergeant instructor, corporal instructor, and a lance corporal instructor. But there would be about 40 rookies, if you like, recruits.
It was with these people that you went to Catterick?
Yes, well, after squad training was done, the sergeant was the in charge. We marched from Fenham Barracks to the central station. Our kit was taken by the Royal Artillery's GS wagons. They had horses then, not motors. Would be taken down in wagons, and we would collect them at the station and take them onto the train. We changed at Darlington, and we got a train from Darlington to Richmond. Now, again, I don't know whether this happened with other regiments, but this happened to ours, and always did, as far as was humanly possible. We didn't know, and we hadn't been told, on leaving the depot, or even on the train, between Darlington and Richmond, that the regimental band would be there to march us into Cap. So we got off the train, fell in outside the Richmond station, and there was the band and bugles for a squad.
Just one squad?
Just for squad. That's what I meant, you know. And our sergeant said, "You're now under the command of the bugle major. Whatever he commands, you carry out." He said, "I have no authority no longer." He hadn't told us this when we'd left the depot, but when we got to Richmond, they were there. They were dressed in the, not in the full uniform, but they were dressed in the service dress uniform as the route march uniform, and they marched us from Richmond Station into camp. And the first time we heard the regimental march was when we were warned that the bass drummer would give the beats for to change from route march pace to regimental pace. And we'd marched from Richmond at 130, and as soon as we got the perimeter of the camp, the band and bugles out, the light bark, quick march, psst, in. Oh, all right.
What was the name of the regimental?
The light bark, regimental march, the light bark. It's an unfinished piece. We had three marches, you know. We had a slow march, a quick march, and the double march. All light infantry regiments had that. I don't know about the rifle regiments, but the light infantry did. All light infantry regiments had three marches. I forget the name of the slow march, but I think it was Faithful. I could be wrong there. The slow march was Faithful, the quick march was the light bark, the double march was the keel roll, and we doubled to that. We had three march passes. You know, when you see the guards on Queen's Birthday, they do two. They do a slow and a quick. We used to do the slow, which was as fast as their quick. We used to do the quick march, and then we used to do the double.
At the double, what's that? Is that running?
Trotting. Oh, yes, that's the double march.
Is that very difficult to do in unison?
It's to try, yes, very difficult to try and keep in line. You always look wavy-navy there. It's very difficult. But you see, that was like infantry's training. Quick, they were in the old army. It wouldn't happen today, you know. The old army, and if you read the history of the old army, it started off with sections, then it started off with platoons, then it started off with companies, then it was formed into regiments, light infantry. They used to call them various things, but light infantry were trained to move into a forward position and to hold it while the main body came up, or if there was a withdrawal, they would be there to hold the difference while the heavy or the rest of the army retired to a favourable position or retired altogether. The light infantry and the rifle regiments did that. They were trained for that. That's why they were trained to be quick. And if you read, I don't know whether you read books or not, or read history, and you'll find this always happened, whether it's fictional or not. I recall reading a book not so very long ago about the landings in Sicily. and our regiment was there, represented by three battalions, the 151 Brigade. And the they'd moved through this village, and there were some stragglers of other regiments who had got to this place where there was some people direct with military police or something like that, and they were asking for where their regiments could be found, and they said, just follow that lot that's just gone through. I said, what lot's that? I said, oh, that's the Durhams. I said, oh, well, then let them go. And he said, we'll never catch them up with you. You know, that was the feeling of the rest of the army to the light infantry. When I said Durhams, it was because the Durhams was there. But it could have been the Somersets or the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire. It could have been the Ireland, the King's Own Yorkshire, the Duke of Cornwall's or the Shropshires. It could have been any of the light infantry or the rifle regiments that had done it. It just happened that the Durhams were in Sicily at that time.
So in other words, they moved quickly.
They moved quickly, yes. It didn't matter where they were at, they moved. We were taught that, we were trained that way.
All right. Can you tell me a little bit about Catterick Camp now, please?
Aye.
All right. How was it laid out?
I cannot tell you that really, but it was real a military garrison. It was a military garrison. Let's put it that way. You had your service corps, your ordnance corps, your signal corps, training depot, I think, for the signal corps. You had the 4th Battalion. When I was there, you had the 4th Battalion, the Royal Tank Regiment. You had the King's Own Scottish Borderers. You had the 20th and 21st Regiments, the Royal Artillery. The Royal Artillery was the first ones to start having mortars. I forget what they call them, but they looked like tanks to draw their guns. At Newcastle, there were horses, but when we got to Catterick, the 20th and 21st Regiments had these. I forget what they call them now.
Bren carriers?
No. They weren't invented then. This was an old mortar car, but it was built like a tank. You know, covered in like a tank, something. There was the Manchester Regiment. There was Royal Engineers, Garrison Engineers, you know, it was all kinds. Fire service, military fire service there as well. There was a railway went right through the road, through the camp. There was roads through the camp. There was a good bus service. But the railway was for the military, you know. The railway to use for the passengers was from Richmond. You had to go to Richmond Station. We were in Mons, I think it was Mons Barracks, no, Mons Lines, I think was the, it was either Mons Lines or Mons Barracks, but I'm pretty sure it was Mons Lines.
And that was the name given to a barracks?
That was to that unit's barracks.
I see.
Now, the next one, the King's Own Scottish Borderers, I recall their name being Lee Cateau. It's French. I think it's one of them must have been a battle there sometime. But we were in Mons Lines, and they were next door neighbours, and we could hear their pipes at night and morning. They used to hear old bugles. But the Royal Artillery was a bit distant away, and there was the main road, there was the military hospital and the Sandy Soldiers' Home. And you went further down, there was the Manchester Regiment. I couldn't say exactly how many regiments was there at the time, but they were the ones I can remember being there.
What was your purpose for being there?
Just garrison duty, home station, home duty.
Did you have to continue training as well?
Oh yes, you did. You did your training. Now, when you started at some time early in the year, when it was possible, the usual training was section and platoon training. Now that was absorbing the new recruits into the sections, and the sections into platoons, so that you understood what a platoon, an active service unit, was, and you gradually built up with your weapon training and your field training, your exercises. You did route marches, you did observation marches, you did your physical training, but it was never the same as what you got at the depot. It was a different life.
In what way was it different?
Well, the discipline wasn't as strict They were not as strict. That doesn't mean discipline had gone, but you didn't jump to attention at every time a lance corporal or an old soldier spoke to you. A corporal could speak to you in the barrack room and you would say, "Yes, corporal," or "Aye, corp, I'll be there in a second." Well, you wouldn't have dared say that at the depot. You see, you've been absorbed and you've been trained for to defend your country. And if you're defending your country, you're defending your comrades. So as there was four sections in a platoon, there would be tried to be equalised out a number of men and a number of NCOs, an NCO in each section. And you'd be taught, we were taught field training, field signals, and to get on, you know, to become a platoon and to be useful. And instead of being having to be told, you would do these things automatically with a wave of a hand or a sound of a whistle, whatever. And then you'd be taught how to observe situations, and you'd be tested on, you'd go on observation route march through an area, and you'd come back, and then maybe the platoon commander would come and question you on what you had observed while you were out.
Did you know when you went on an observation route march that you were going to be asked those questions?
Oh yes, they went underhand with that. They would say, "We're going on an observation march, and after the march, when we return to barracks, you'll be questioned on the area you've covered." Now, unlike other people, like normal civilian people, the army had a standard of colours, and they used to say, "You describe a colour to the same as everything on a snooker table except the pink. There is no grey and there is no pink. It's a definite colour. If it's pink, it's red. If it's red, it's red. If it's black, it's black. It's not grey. If it's not black, then it's white. Even if it was a light grey colour, it would be classed as white. Straw colour or yellow colour was all yellow. Green was green, whether it was dark green, light green, or any other colour, it would be classed as green. So you had all the colours, white, red, green, brown. They were all, a ploughed field would be classed as a brown field. Unless it was black, then it would be classed as a black field. But if it showed the light shade, it would be brown. If it showed the dark shade, it would be black. You couldn't have it in between. Not light green, light brown, or anything like that. It was one colour. And you'd be questioned when you got back.
So can you give an example of describing some terrain that you might have passed?
Well, the River Swale, and in that area you would as a river or a wood, and then you would say there's a white house, and you would say white house as you were the clock reference, and you would say from that house reference point the white house or the green field or the black field, and that would be a reference point, and that automatically that was centre of the clock.
What do you mean this clock reference side?
Well, if you wanted to get a place, you class this. Now then, the centre of the clock would be your reference point.
So now, for example, a white house, yes.
So you see, if it was a church with a spire, church with a tower, you could tell them. If the square were with a tower, and if they were at the point, they were a spire, you would say that. Or you would say red building, white building, black building. That's your reference point. Now from there, the next instruction would be 1 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And as the clock was there, that point was the centre. So if you said 12, you'd look straight up, and within seconds you would get the target.
Instead of using a map reference and compass directions, you would use a reference point and then the hands, the imaginary hands and imaginary clock.
Yes. And the reference point would be the centre of the clock. But that was daylight. You couldn't do that in night time because you couldn't see. And then,
did 12 o'clock on the clock have to point north or something like that?
No, 12 o'clock was straight up, no matter where it was at. If I was looking over there, there's the house there, down there. Well, there's that plant pot with the... oh, the middle one.
Yes, geranium.
No, the next one there, the yes. Cactus.
Yeah.
Now, just say that is the centre point. That's your reference point. Now, I'll say 12 o'clock. You look straight ahead, and there's a house there with a roof. That's the target.
Right, I see.
If you say 12 o'clock, and if you say 11 o'clock, you look that way, or is it 11 o'clock that way, 1 o'clock that way. And that's from that point. And it could be anywhere at the time. North, south, east, or west, didn't matter. Because it was from where you were at that you were getting that reference point. So it could be either right, left, centre, or back, or anywhere.
Did you have to learn map reading skills?
Yes. Oh, yes, map reading. Map reading was part, and map reading came in your second certificate of education. You had to pass map reading. If you didn't pass map reading, you didn't pass your second.
Can you tell me a little bit about route marches, Nez?
Oh, aye. I don't think they were ever liked, but you got on with them, yes. You had the band and bugles with you, and they played intermittently. Various marches and what have you. Oh, you go out, you maybe march for 50 minutes, I think. Was it 50 minutes or 55 minutes? You had 55 minutes and you had a 5 minute break. You had 5 minutes break in every hour. And you just marched. Now, you always marched in those days with your full kit. You wouldn't carry any ammunition, but you would carry everything else. Everything else you had, you would carry, what was available. Except what was at the laundry, or what was being repaired at the maybe shoe repairers. But all your equipment and everything else would be in your kit, and you would carry that. It would weigh about 56 pounds. And hour upon hour, you would do it. You maybe sleep out overnight. You would use two ground sheets as a little marquee, a little tent. You get a piece of cord, a couple of sticks, and you would spread them out. And you get underneath, use your one overcoat for to lie on, you'd have got to wrap over two, there would be always two men. You'd have your weapons inside, and you'd maybe use your pack as a pillar if you were out overnight.
Did you have many route marches there?
I can't recall having too many in England.
When you were on route marches, were you able to pass the time somewhere as you travel along? Did you sing, for example, or anything like that?
Oh, yes, we pulled each other's legs. The usual one which comes to mind is if you passed a cemetery, and they would always say, you're passing dead ground there, mind, because in tactics, you used to find dead ground, so that you could hide from the enemy. But of course, you know, when you pass the cemetery, there would usual crack, and I think that would be universal throughout the army. Mind, there's some dead ground over there, and that was when you passed the cemetery. It wasn't meant as a religious, it was just a military saying at the time. Just like they used to use on the marches, they would sing words to hymns. But there would be military words to the hymn tune.
Can you remember any of the songs now?
Well, there was one. When I get my civvy clothes on, oh, how happy I will be. No more church parades on Sunday, no more asking for a pass. Things like that. Well, I would sing that. And then we used to sing one about the regimental march, and we used to get wrong over that one. Aye.
Can you remember it?
Oh, we used to start singing, oh, look at the soldiers, oh, look at the feet, oh, look at the soldiers, they get sweet all to eat. You know, other words, of course. But yes, they used to sing that. And the regimental or the company's hall majors, they would get a bit wild about that. You know, the lads wouldn't have been irreverent. They would just been, you know, a bit jokey. It was another time. I was on a route march, but this was in India. We had a company commander who was very strict. And Sergeant Major was a wee bit, he wasn't bad, but he was a wee bit strict as well. And this company commander got the nickname of being the Whiplash, because he was very strict, you know. And they used to sing a song, and then he used to go, "Whiplash." And the Sergeant Major used to come galloping down trying to find out who'd sung it. And the company commander at the finish, he knew where it was. "Sergeant Major," he says, "while they're singing," he says, "they're marching." He says, "You worry when they're not singing." He says, "That's when you've got to worry." And that truly is a military saying. Not only to our regiment, I think most regiments of the British Army in time immemorial, that one. But, our officers had a sense of humour. They didn't dare short at times, but yes, that a command, but they led.
You mentioned there was the regimental band march with you. Were they carrying
their weapons, but nothing else. They carried the weapons and maybe some equipment which they might need, maybe a water bottle or something like that. I cannot recall how they addressed, but they had the instruments. Well,
did they at all play while you were marching?
Oh, yes. When we marched, when they played, we would be marching at 130 to the minute.
And that would not, well, that would not be at ease, that would be...
That troop march pierce. But once we returned to camp, and we got to the perimeter of either barracks, camp, or cantonment, wherever you were at, once they entered the perimeter, regimental march always, and you marched to attention, and you were in, yes. You were strictly on ceremonial then.
How long did route marches last?
Could last hours. And then on training days, you would march maybe 2 or 3 days and train, sleep in the hedgerows or in the fields. The quartermaster, regimental quartermaster, would fetch hot meals if it was possible. Maybe give you sandwiches and you had your bottle of water. Your water bottle, but you always had to have permission from an officer before you could use it. You could never use it on your own. Water bottles were tested. The platoon sergeant, the platoon commander would come around, test your water bottles to see if they were full or not. Only when they gave permission. You might ask, you know, you might say, "Can we have a drink of water, Sarge?" or like that, and he would go and ask the platoon commander, he said, no. And if anybody had an empty bottle at the end of the march and he was tested, he'd be punished.
Why was that?
Because he disobeyed orders.
No, I'm sorry, I meant, why was this restriction on the consumption of water during the
To march? Save it. Save it as long as you possibly could. You might need an emergency. And while you're on a route march, you went in an emergency. You see, you could get a forced march. You would double most of the time. I was only on one of those, and that was in India. But yes, you get forced marches. You see, at the end of the march or the end of the training, the water wagon may have not come up, and you may need the water to make some tea or to help to boil your vegetables or something like that, and you would have to hand your water in. And that's why, you know, everyone was expected to. If the CO said they're going to have a drink of water, you've got a drink of water. Company commanders are handed down. But in peacetime, wartime was different. But peacetime, we conserved the water as long as possible. It was more or less, I think, weight carrying training rather than being comfortable. I think it was to train you. To harden you, if you like.
And talking of which, what about your feet? Was there any instructions given to you on how to take care of your feet?
Well, you had clean socks, and you washed your feet before you went out, if you could. You had good boots, and if you had blisters, you saw the... after one march, your feet would be examined. After every march, the platoon commander was responsible for examining your feet. And if he said... "You better see the MO." You went straight away and saw the MO, and he would, if they had blisters, he'd maybe burst them or treat them. Yes, that happened.
Did you learn any techniques of reducing the chances of having blisters? Was there anything you could do to?
Very little. If your feet was hardened, you didn't get them. Some lads suffered, others didn't. But majority didn't, you know. There was the odd one here and there. I've had blistered feet, but it wasn't because of my feet. It was because of a bad pair of boots I had, and that was during the war. Never had it in peacetime, but just once in war I had a bad pair of boots. And I had to march a lot of miles. Did a lot of miles, and when I got back in, I had huge blisters on my heels underneath. Oh.
Okay, can we look at some of the other aspects of the training that you mentioned? You mentioned tactical exercises, and you talked about them partly when you described route marches. What sort of things would you do on a tactical exercise?
Well, first, as I explained previously, you would learn platoon and section training for the start off. You may do that for a week or a period of time, let's say a period of time.
Right. What would that consist of, platoon and section training?
That was training a platoon in defence or a platoon in attack or a platoon on the move. Alternative sides of the road, and when you're marching, single file. And then you would learn to be absorbed into a company. And then you may have a company attack, which would cover four times. You see, you had four sections in a platoon, four platoons in a company. Today they are three and three and three. So you would learn that, and once your company commander or the CO was satisfied that the whole battalion was fit, you would have a battalion training. And then you'd go on from battalion training to brigade training. And you go from brigade training to divisional training, where you know, you jumped up all the way. And then there could be army command manoeuvres. I'm not saying necessarily they happened, but that is the standard training in those days.
Can you remember any details of any tactical exercises that you were on while you were at Catterick?
Well, we used to say they were more a joke than real training, because, you know, you only had blank ammunition, you never had any enemy. You were firing into imaginary objects, and it's funny, you don't get the same effect. You have to have the enemy firing at you to get really down to it, to be a soldier, real soldier. And a lot of the men, you know, it was just like a skylark. Anyway, the men liked training. They liked to be away from barracks. And if they could get away out of barracks under any excuse, now I mean that, under any excuse they could get away from barracks for a day, they were happy. And I was the same. I couldn't say I wasn't. Well, if we went on training, you know, first thing was, you weren't as strict again in your dress. You weren't as strict in parades where, you know, they would say you're going to move off at a certain time. But 99 times out of 100 when you were training, it never happened.